Ananda Brindavan Champu, Chapter 15, Part 2, Lifting Govardhan Hill. Meanwhile, holding a brilliant, flashing lightning bolt in his hand, Indra sped through the sky on his elephant carrier. Though sitting on his elephant carrier Aravata, Indra actually rode upon the chariot of his anger. Showing his unflinching affection toward the rain clouds, Indra cracked the sky and made everyone cry with a tumultuous thundering sound. Hissing like an angry snake, Indra raced to Brindavan to survey the situation. Since he had already sent the Samvartaka clouds a few days before, he assumed Brindavan must now be totally demolished. Astonishment seized Indra's mind upon seeing the dense peaks of Govardhan piercing the huge Samvartaka clouds and soaring above them. The deer, birds, and other living entities of Brindavan wandered about happily, unaffected by Indra's torrents of rain. Clusters of white clouds completely covered the base of Govardhan. These clouds enhanced the beauty of Giriraj as they washed the mountain with the rains of devastation. Giriraj looked like a huge umbrella, and the clouds seemed like a decorative fringe of pearls ornamenting that umbrella. While observing this, Indra, thinking himself the supreme controller, decided to exhibit the limit of his anger. Cruel-hearted Indra disrespected both the cows and the Lord. In order to destroy the land of cows, he instigated the clouds of devastation to thunder menacingly and pour incessant rain on Brindavan. Out of fear, the clouds dutifully followed the directions of Indra. With the mood of a determined fighter, the furious storm tried to blow away Giriraj with severely high winds. Shihari, his effulgent jewel-like body washed by the moonlight of a smile, instantly removed whatever hardship Giriraj felt from the lightning bolts, heavy hailstones, profuse rains, and high piercing winds. By seeing Krishna's effulgence and feeling the sweet breath from his lustrous lotus face, Giriraj felt totally relieved while relishing the exciting adventures of the Lord. Outside the shelter of the hill, the fearsome thunderbolts crisscrossing the sky looked like creepers of light dangling in the air. Ominous dark clouds loaded with rain flashed with occasional rainbows. Beneath Giriraj, the cloud-like Mukunda himself and the steady streaks of lightning gopis created another type of storm. The rainbow appeared as the peacock feather on Krishna's crown, and the stream of Krishna's beauty flowed like the constant rain. The only difference was that underneath the mountain, Krishna's brilliant Kastuba gem served as the effulgent sun. Krishna is the perfect conjugal lover. His face is a spotless moon, and his eyes are always roaming seductively. To completely remove the Brajavasi's anxiety about his fatigue from lifting Giriraj, Krishna played sweetly again on his murali. Hearing that ambrosial sound, one Brajavasi said, "Look, look! A blue lotus hangs over Krishna's left ear. The pleasing vibration of his blissful flute spreads in all directions. In this joyful pastime, his creeper-like right eyebrow rises slightly as if saying, 'What can you say about my left hand, which is effortlessly holding up Giriraj?' Thus glittering with excellence, the all-attractive Giridhari displays his sweet power." By the mercy of Govardhan Hill, the Brajavasis did not feel the least bit disturbed. Rather, they tasted endless happiness passing their time absorbed in loving thoughts of Krishna. This pastime completely astonished the Brahmanas and other devotees fixed in neutrality, Santa Ras. Radhika and the gopis in Madhurya Ras exhibited their deep love for Krishna. Among his friends, Sakya Ras, the jokers like Madhu Mango pleased Krishna by laughing and merrymaking. Intimate friends like Subal continually enthused and encouraged him. Raktak, Patrak, and others in Dasharas constantly served Krishna with affection. Thus, the different associates of Krishna delighted in their individual loving relationships with him. Mother Yashoda and others, overcome with parental affection, Vatsalya Ras, However, felt very sad to see Krishna like this. To please her son, Yashoda tried to offer Krishna some juicy camphorated tambula made of cardamom, nutmeg, cloves, lime paste, catechu, and betel nut. Wrapped in a dark green palm leaf, this expertly made tambula had the power to aid digestion, remove anxiety, and fill one with pleasure. Holding it in her lotus palm, Yashoda tenderly offered it to Krishna while pleading, "Oh, my darling Damodar, please stop playing your melodious murali. The sound of the flute cannot fill your stomach. Please take this and remove my anxiety. Why are you disturbing my mind by not eating? Now eat this wonderful tambula which will enchant your mind. If you do not want it, then at least eat something that you like very much. You have passed many days without eating, so do not delay any more. If you are waiting for the rain to stop, then please consider that your brother Balaram is very much afflicted by hunger. Since you will do anything for your brother, please honor my request and accept this tambula." After saying this, Yashoda said, "Subal, you are overflowing with love for Krishna. Since you are also the dear object of his affection, will you please offer this tambula to Krishna?" Saying this, Yashoda put the tambula in his hand. Krishna's dear friend Subal felt boundless joy as he held the tambula in one hand and removed Krishna's flute with his other hand. Taking the edge of his cloth, he gently cleansed Krishna's lotus face, which was adorned with aguru and slightly reddish in hue. Seeing Krishna's lips turn red from chewing the tambula offered by Subal, Yashoda smiled in happiness. Outside the umbrella of Giriraj, the huge cloud formation sent by furious Indra poured incessant rains and blew fierce hurricane winds. Yet not even one particle of dust washed off the surface of Giriraj. The deer, birds, animals, and even the leaves in the trees remained totally unaffected by the devastating storm. The deluge, which assailed the earth after being brought from the ocean by the clouds, again ran back to the sea. The discomfort the clouds underwent from swallowing the ocean water and vomiting it back was the only result of their proposed calamity. The storm tried his best to show off his power, but he soon became totally exhausted from pouring profuse rain. Alas, alas! The clouds retreated and fell at the feet of their master. Illusioned by his rage, Indra felt no fatigue as he continued to attack Giriraj. Being blinded by anger, he finally lost all his intelligence and went totally blind. The torrential rains and cyclone winds harassed Vrindavan continually for 7 days. Although repeatedly trying to fulfill the order of Indra, whose intelligence was more crooked than millions of lightning bolts, the clouds could not destroy or even slightly disturb the people of Vrindavan. The big clouds and their assistants almost died from their hard labor to please Indra. Although pulled down from his platform of false pride and defeated, the shameful Indra retained his fighting spirit. Those 7 days felt like 7 millenniums of intense pain for Indra, yet the Brajavasis saw it as 7 joy-filled hours. Oh, just see the wonderful splendor of the Lord's divine prowess, which transcends the comprehension of even Brahma and Shiva. Although Govardhan Hill is immovable, it rested on the hand of Krishna. For 7 long days, the monsoon rains and horrific earth-shaking winds tortured the people of the world with bitter suffering and untold miseries. The serene and peaceful Giriraj, however, was not the least bit disturbed. Being constantly bathed by the rains and anointed with the fragrance of Krishna's divine body, Giriraj looked absolutely radiant and beautiful throughout the whole ordeal. By the mercy of Krishna, the danger finally ended. In the distance, the Brajavasis saw the gateways and rooftop rooms of their houses glittering attractively from being washed by the heavy rains. A fresh, clear sky appeared to fill all directions with auspiciousness. The people of Vrindavan felt that they had just emerged from a deep, dark well of calamity and come to the light of good fortune. The Earth planet thought it was again sitting on the tusks of Adi Baraha. the plants and creepers sprouted anew and unfurled fresh leaves. Just as one cured from the disease of insanity attains peace and no longer suffers from epileptic fits, similarly, the wind, now freed from the disease of devastation, blew gently. The rivers, the wives of the ocean, again flowed slowly and respectfully towards their husbands. Just as the forceful pushings of the mind subside as one advances on the path of God-realization, similarly, the blasting clouds dissipated to leave a clear sky behind them. After aborting 7 children represented by the 7 days and nights, the wife of time now gave birth to a beautiful son appearing as the auspicious 8th day. On that day, the Supreme Lord Giridhari said, "The fierce wind and rain has now ceased, and the sky is totally free from the clouds of devastation. Free from the thick covering of mud, the earth is now dry and smooth." After falling unconscious for 1 week, the sun opened his eyes. "O residents of Vrindavan, your village has returned to its normal state. Now it is time to come out from beneath the mountain." After hearing this, everyone assembled in a happy mood and let out the cows. The cows considered themselves fortunate because they got to relish the sweetness of Krishna's face for 7 continuous days. They lost interest in other things that had previously pleased them. When the coward boys called them out, they delayed for a while, and then shot out like a volley of arrows. But when they saw Krishna still under the hill, they quickly ran back and surrounded him. Immediately, Krishna drove them out again by glancing at them with the compassion of a friend. From all directions, the smooth-skinned, pleasant-looking herds of cows streamed out from the valley under Govardhan Hill. As they came up, they looked like the expanded hood of Seshanag rising out of Patala Loka, or a sheet of moonshine hiding in a cave out of fear of darkness, or like matted locks of diffused light being born from the crystal mountain of Giriraj. Thus induced by Krishna's words, the coward men gave up their fear and smiled cheerfully. With great enthusiasm, they left the temporary village beneath Giriraj. The elated gopis cast veiled glances at Krishna as they walked out from the hill. The effulgent gopis seemed like the rays of a brilliant light visible even in the daytime, or the dazzling rays emanating from the valuable jewels below the mountain, or the glowing light of the ruby atop the hood of a Naga snake. After the cowherd boys left, Krishna set the hill down exactly in its previous location. He tossed Giriraj off his hand just like a child throwing a flower ball. Then Krishna met his friends for more pastimes of wandering in Vrindavan. Overwhelmed with ecstatic love, the residents of Vrindavan came forward to greet Krishna according to their individual relationships with him. His eyes pouring tears of love, Balaram warmly embraced Krishna. Mother Yashoda said, "Alas, alas! My son's body has been severely weakened from bearing such a heavy weight." Using her lotus palm, Yashoda massaged Krishna's left arm and kissed his hand affectionately. Rohini, who had attained the summit of parental affection, offered aarti to Krishna and Balaram with an artistically designed jeweled ghee lamp. With their hearts, which were abodes of deep love for Krishna, the housewives of Vrindavan offered him their full blessings. They worshipped Krishna with yogurt, rice paddy, and fresh grass. The potent brahmanas and their attractive wives offered boons and words of praise. Sananda and the other elderly men, bound by the ropes of intense parental affection, embraced the boys and smelled their heads. The beloved gopis and their associates, dyed in pure love and covered by shyness, also honored Krishna and Balaram. They worshipped them with their doe-eyed glances and their lotus faces blossoming with desire. While they embraced Krishna and Balaram within their minds, their lips shone attractively with sweet, seductive smiles. As the spring season is ornamented with the months of Chaitra and Vaishakha, which are full of fragrant flowers, similarly the demigods such as the Siddhas, Vijayadharas, Gandharvas, and Kimpurushas showered flowers in great delight while singing the glories of Krishna. The demigods prayed, "All glories to the son of Nanda Maharaj! All glories to the holy abode of Vrindavan, which abounds in blissful mellows. O Krishna, you are enriched by superb qualities. The pure taste of serving your lotus feet is the source of unlimited bliss in the hearts of realized souls. Your all-attractive transcendental body is concentrated liquid nectar. The moonlight of your nails, which shines like brilliant rubies, takes away the miseries of your intimate associates. There is no limit to your fame. Hey, Sridhar! Hey, Sober One! Hey, Super Excellent Hero Vrindavan! O Gopa with a bluish body, may you always be victorious. Anyone who once says, I am yours, and from this day forward I completely surrender unto you, is immediately delivered from material existence by your mercy. It is impossible for us to calculate how much you reward one who serves your enchanting lotus feet, which remove the miseries of repeated birth and death. O beloved of Gokula, you are served, worshipped, and glorified by pure devotees who are eternally liberated and full of knowledge. O Lord of all the demigods, your transcendental behavior astonishes the entire universe. We repeatedly offer our obeisances unto you. O Krishna, all glories unto you. Indra, who is especially angry, crooked, impudent, and falsely proud, misbehaved by cruelly attacking Vrindavan with his Samvartaka clouds. The Brajavasis prayed to you for protection, and you saved them from destruction by holding up Giriraj with the splendid pole of your arm. In this pastime, Giriraj sat in your hand just like a play ball. You offered your lotus hand to Giriraj as a wonderful bed. You turned Indra's mountain of pride into an insignificant pebble, just as a crest jewel is firmly fixed in the crown of a king. Similarly, those opposed to you are tightly bound in the prison of material existence. Alas, what is the destiny of one full of false pride? O friend of the Brajavasis, O ocean of compassion, O lord of the three worlds who wanders throughout the creation, you personally maintain the surrendered souls by your inconceivable potencies. But those bound in the prison house of pride never attain the fortune of serving your lotus feet. O Lord, all victory unto you! You have sown the seed of conjugal love within the hearts of the gopis. O you whose elegant crown is adorned with a peacock feather glistening attractively like a beautiful rainbow. You constantly churn the mellows of love into a condensed form, and then taste that bliss with your intimate devotees. Without a doubt, your body is totally transcendental. It is the origin of creation and ornamented with compassion. Your body is the source of unlimited glories and is the shelter of endless spiritual euphoria. You are the embodiment of fortune for the adept yogis seeking spiritual ecstasy in their hearts. Appearing fresh and ever youthful, you always take pleasure in satisfying the residents of Vrindavan. Your body is the personification of complete jubilation, and you are forever full of happiness. You perfectly execute each and every one of your actions. All glories unto you! You are always yearning for the love of your devotees. Your enemies consume themselves by envying you. When demons oppose you, you playfully taunt them. You are known as Shyamasundara because your spiritual body resembles the hue of a beautiful blue rain cloud. The devotees who are like honeybees at your lotus feet have no desire for economic development, sense gratification, or salvation. One engaged in serving you never tries to enjoy husband, wife, son, and so on. For a devotee, you alone are the only wife, husband, child, teacher, and wealth. You are their fame, pride, and the very meaning of their lives. Of course, you are known only by your prema bhaktas. Although we demigods attempt to glorify you, we do not really know you. You are far beyond the reach of prayers. Your effulgence derides the radiance of the clouds. You take away the sufferings of the distressed. Your enchanting transcendental body surges with waves of amorous love. You turn your enemies into insignificant beings. Your splendid moon-like face smashes Chandra's pride to pieces, and your presence makes Vrindavan beautiful. You remove all other aspirations from one who surrenders unto you. You are restless with hankering to ever delight in love. All glory is to you. All glory is to you. O gentle one, your beautiful eyes have forcefully captured the splendor of the lotus. O one who allures the eyes with the chamara fan of your artistic hairstyle. O lotus-eyed one, your sweet lips deride the taste of ripe bimba fruits. You give bliss and elegance to the world. Your glittering teeth, more attractive than kunda flowers, mock the brilliance of a row of pearls. O effulgent one, your cheerful smile shines like twinkling stars. All glory is unto you. Your singing and flute playing unfold many erotic pastimes. Seeing you saturates the mind and heart with ecstasy. You are decorated with glimmering golden earrings that swing to and fro and reflect splendidly on your soft cheeks. Your opulent ornaments accent your exquisite beauty. The bees hum loudly as they hover above the garland draped on your powerful broad chest. That soft, pure garland is sprinkled with pollen and drops of honey. Out of your infinite compassion, you fill the hearts of your devotees with delight. All glory is to you. You are the abode of all desirable beauty. The lines of Lakshmi complement your enchanting chest. Your garland swings out of fear, and your necklaces move like waves. Your handsome chest induces lusty desires within the impenetrable hearts of chaste housewives. Seeing your own reflection in a mirror, your pride increases like a sporty new Cupid. Your chest is further beautified by your arms, which resemble the elegant trunk of a baby elephant. All glory is to you. O chief advisor of the coward men, you are their leader and only shelter. O beloved son of Nanda Maharaj, you are glorious and venerable. You alone can remove the dense pride of Indra. Please make us mirthful by bestowing your mercy. Brahma praised you for killing the demons drunk with power. We demigods can never conquer you in battle. So please, therefore, rule us according to your free will. You remove the miseries from the three worlds. Stop the cycle of birth and death and delight the hearts of your devotees. A peacock feather decorates your brilliant crown. You sport in the forest groves along the bank of the Kalindi. You destroy the mode of ignorance. We worship your limbs which glisten like the branches of a tamal tree. Your brilliant dark blue form derides a mountain of cudgel. All glories to you. Please make us intensely attached to you and engage us in your service. Free us from the control of lust and keep us under your control. Please destroy the fear of repeated birth and death. You withhold your kindness from the cruel and wicked. Therefore, please remove the disease of desiring honor and distinction. Please make us fortunate by manifesting fully in our hearts. Hey, learned one, your wanderings in the kunjas of Vrindavan excites the mind and exhilarates the heart. You shine brilliantly like the autumn moon, and your gentle smile is alive with pastimes. The witty words flowing from your mouth produce infinite varieties of intimate mellows. You are always anxious to relish emotional ecstasies within your heart. You are famous throughout the Vedas for dispelling doubts and solving disputes. Your pleasing words fill the ears with waves of loving flavors. Your inner joy arises from pure love. You are the mine of transcendental splendor. Your roving eyes, which mock blossoming lotuses, are slightly reddish due to the intoxication of lust. Seeing your eyes pleases the eyes of everyone. As the reservoir of mercy, you deliver the entire world from distress and dangers. You establish rules and regulations to create good fortune for the people of the world. You sit on the lotus of the heart of a devotee who glorifies you with pure love. But when you get angry, you could act like Yamaraj to easily crush the prowess of an insubordinate servant like King Indra. You are decorated with the rare jewel of formidability. You fearlessly lifted Govardhan and stood like a graceful dancer, effortlessly holding the mountain in your lotus hand. The white lotus tucked over your ear resembles a conch shell, and your earrings glitter like sunshine. You are famous for satisfying the devotees who desire to see your magnificent form. You are known by men and demigods. You mystify both the moving and non-moving. You are the indomitable force. With the pinky finger of your left hand, you held up the vast mountain of Govardhan. Colorful varieties of loving moods enhance your pure character. O illustrious one, although the Brajagopis are your most confidential lovers, you uphold the strictest codes of morality. You compassionately protected Gokula from the clouds of devastation that assailed your beloved Vrindavan with floods, lightning bolts, and torrents of rain. Abounding in kindness, you always do good for everyone and satisfy all desires. O skillful one, your youthful elegance conquers the splendor of a cloud bank. You appear in this world to bestow your blessings and violently suppress opposition to pure dharma. You dress in gorgeous, glimmering golden garments which outshine the pollen of Kadamba flowers. You are the wisest among all wise men. You conquered the crafty Indra and shattered his pride. May you, who affectionately protected the residents of Gokul by lifting Giriraj, be the continual object of our glorification. O Lord, just with your hands, you easily pulverize the pride of invincible demons like Bakasura, Putana, Vatsasura, and others. Like a powerful snake, you instantly subdued your enemies such as Akasura. You demolished the pride of the angry Lord Brahma. You protected the Yamuna by banishing Kaliya with your forceful dancing. O beautiful one, you courageously saved your friends from the forest fire by putting them in illusion. O Lord, whenever you associate intimately with the gopis, your mind becomes agitated to enjoy conjugal pastimes due to the intensity of their pure love. We saw this tendency of yours when you stole the clothes of the Brajakumaris. In this humorous pastime, you captivated the minds of the innocent girls with your sweet, pleasant words. By accepting the offerings of delicious food from the Yajnapatnis, you reciprocated with their love. You are the abode of blissful festivals. O intelligent one, you saved the world from the deluge of destruction. You removed Indra's pride by stopping his worship and by defeating him when he attacked Vrindavan. You satisfy the desires of everyone by lifting the king of all mountains. You bestow happiness according to one's mood of love toward you. O Lord, you please the eyes of everyone. You forgive even the lowest, most offensive living entities within the universe if they surrender unto you. O Lord, you always increase the happiness of your intimate servants. You manifested dreadful boldness by uprooting Indra's Nandakana forest with the peak of Giriraj. When will we fallen ones be eligible to hear your auspicious glories? You possess adorable beauty and deserve to be worshipped by everyone. O Lord, who can completely know all of your unlimited attributes? No one in the universe has the qualities that you do. O embodiment of all pleasing traits, you are inconceivable to the non-devotees, but you are the benevolent maintainer for one who surrenders to you in distress or humility. We beg you, therefore, to please show compassion and protect us. Please beautify and enlighten us so that we can surrender unto you and drown in the ocean of your blissful service. Ignorance and illusion have nearly killed us. Please fill us with detachment and ever-increasing love for you. Please destroy our wicked thoughts and empower us to properly glorify you. O Lord, we offer our obeisances unto you. Your splendor is immeasurable. O embodiment of compassion, if you give us your mercy, then we can take shelter of your lotus feet, offer our respects, and chant your holy name. All glory is to you. You continually perform exciting pastimes in the hearts of your pure devotees. You always give pleasure to the king and queen of Vrindavan. Your wandering through the forest of Vrindavan nourishes it with the full extent of your compassion. You crush the conceit born of false ego. At every moment you give joy to your devotees. To protect your own community, you are ready to destroy millions of enemies. O younger brother of Baladev, You are always fixed in the highest bliss. O worshipable one, you are the super excellent master of all arts. Everything about your character is pure and sublime. You astonish the heart with your sensational pastimes. Although you are all-pervading, you are rarely perceived. You are famous as Sri Hari because you remove all bad behavior from your servitors. You instantly favor a repentant soul who sincerely prays, O my Lord, you are the deliverer from material bondage. For so long I have not served you. Now please accept me and engage me in your loving service. You give strength to the repentant and take pleasure in protecting your devotees. You are an ocean of the finest qualities. You obliterate the pride of Cupid. Radhika always serves you and pleases you more than anyone else. She Radha, who has perfectly mastered the 64 arts, is the main support for all your astounding transcendental adventures. You created a jovial celebration by lifting Govardhan Hill. The mind of a humble and submissive person always dwells in you alone. You give everything in charity. Among millions of wise and venerable demigods like Brahma and Shiva, you alone have the power to award all auspiciousness and give ecstatic love to every living entity. Just by a glance, you can enlighten and liberate anyone. You fulfill the desires of one who is anxious to glorify your transcendental pastimes. Whenever you hear jingling ankle bells and the loud sound of various percussion instruments such as the din-din drum played by the gopis, your heart leaps with a desire to relish intimate pleasure pastimes. Your characteristic of being controlled by your devotees is your natural embellishment. Alas, you are very difficult to understand. Are your pastimes also inconceivable by Sankarsana? Indeed, you are truly transcendental. The impious can never comprehend you with their logic and argument. You deliver one from the cycle of birth and death. Your playing is like the sporting of a mad elephant. You are spilling over with humorous pastimes. O Lord, who can glorify you properly? Jnanis and mental speculators can never perceive the truth about you. Being completely pure, you exist beyond all contamination of the material energy. O peaceful one, what more can we say? You are the benefactor of everyone. You eternally exist as the sublime, mysterious one, beyond the injunctions of the Shastras, O Supreme Controller. Even Mahesh cannot fathom your pastimes, what to speak of Kuvera and the other celestials. O friend of humanity, please reside in our hearts. Your devotees become deeply satisfied whenever you manifest before them. The demigods like us have been severely oppressed by tyrants like Kongsa. Please enliven us by showing your mercy upon us. You are witty, clever, attractive, and enchanting. Your matchless prowess always benefits the thousands of gorgeous gopis. Your love is ever expanding throughout the day and night. In conjugal enjoyment, you take the aggressive role and behave like a maddened elephant in the kunjas. Your handsome body appears like a mound of cudgel. We constantly pray to your charming pastimes that surround you like a dazzling aura. Thus, the perfectly composed prayers of the demigods resounded throughout the atmosphere to enchant the hearts of everyone with the glories of Krishna. Vrajaraja Nanda, who has a jovial personality, ruled his kingdom with excessive affection. After the Govardhan pastime, the respectable men of Vrindavan approached Nanda Maharaj and appealed to him. O King of Vrindavan, although you completely removed the fear and doubts we had about stopping the sacrifice for Indra, due to our wealth and prestige, we are still somewhat contaminated with suspicion. In great amazement, we watch Indra send innumerable Samvartaka clouds to drown the world and completely wash away our village of Vrindavan. Your seven-year-old son, who is a fountainhead of youth, beautified with long tresses of curly hair, appears like the embodiment of sweet joy. We saw him pick up the massive mountain of Govardhan with his left hand and hold it for seven continuous days. Such a marvelous feat is very difficult even for Lord Shiva, the master of Parvati. Just as an elephant easily plucks a lotus full of fragrant honey with his trunk, your son effortlessly picked up Giriraj. By doing this, Krishna turned the famous Indra, who was infatuated with unlimited anger, into an insignificant village goat. Therefore, we cannot understand the identity of this person who bewilders us and covers our knowledge. As soon as Krishna appeared in our village, he became the life and soul of everyone. His lips are as sweet as the banduli flower, yet he drank the deadly poison of Putana's breast milk, purified her, and made her his nursemaid. One day Yashoda placed sleepy Krishna beneath a cart to take rest. Suddenly, just by kicking his delicate feet, which are softer than a bunch of Ashoka leaves, he smashed the cart and killed the hideous Akatasura who was hiding there. Thereafter, with the ring of his two arms, which break our patience and are unconquerable by men and demigods, he clutched the throat of the terrible windstorm demon and squeezed out his life. Then in the course of playing, he killed offensive demons like Vatsasura, Bokasura, and Agasura. In this activity, Krishna did not fight or even feel the least bit fatigued. By nature, this boy of yours is simply enjoying throughout the day and night. His ecstasy and loving affection seem to increase at every moment. We have never seen anyone with such unique, matchless beauty. You must have noticed all these things too. We beg you, therefore, to please reveal the truth about the real identity of your son. Maharajananda laughed loudly in appreciation of the statements of the coward men. His lips refulgent with a glorious sweetness, Nanda said, "O respectable coward men, please listen attentively and put your faith in my truthful words. Gargamuni, who has a pure and blissful mind and who is adorned with the quality of omniscience, perform the name-giving ceremony of my son." That great Muni dispelled the doubts and illusions about Krishna's identity by stating, "There is no limit to the good fortune of your son. Even the Paramahansas who have reached the zenith of knowledge cannot perceive the mysterious truth about him. In each of the four yugas, your son has appeared in four different colors. In Satya Yuga, he came in a white color. In Treta Yuga, he proclaimed victory in a red color. In Dwapara Yuga, he appeared dark blue like a rain cloud. And in most Kali Yugas, he comes in a white color." Gargamuni continued, "But once in the day of Brahma, he appears in a dark blue form as Krishna, and afterwards he appears in a yellow color. By his own desire and spiritual power, he appeared as the son of Vasudeva. Therefore, he is also named Vasudeva, and he is equal to Narayana. Those who love him become free from all offenses, experience auspiciousness everywhere, and remain always satisfied. He is the only object of love for both men and women. Out of fear of him, no enemy comes here to Vrindavan." Nanda Maharaj said, "Therefore, my dear coward men, you need not be afraid in this matter. My son Krishna acts for everyone's benefit in all respects. It is quite fitting that you have developed such affection for him. Do not allow the mood of awe and reverence, Aishwarya Bhav, to reduce the intensity of your friendly love toward him. On its own, the mood of majesty, Aishwarya Bhav, is neither natural nor intimate. Do not therefore put yourself in distress by maintaining this mood of awe and reverence toward Krishna. Make this youthful son of mine the object of your compassion." Thus relieved and satisfied, the residents of Vrindavan gladly returned to their respective homes. Sometime later, Krishna, being attracted by the opulence of Giriraj, and to get relief from the fatigue of holding him up for a week, strolled along a ridge of Govardhan Hill. Krishna walked there alone in order to bestow mercy upon the heavenly King Indra. The coward boys suffered greatly in the absence of their beloved friend. Krishna's pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill had covered the one with 1,000 eyes and layers of intense embarrassment. As a result, Indra abandoned his bad qualities of anger and pride and came to Vrindavan from his heavenly abode accompanied by a Kamadhenu who carried the sweet smell of good fortune. Indra wanted to meet Krishna and beg pardon for his grave offense. In her humble way, the Surabhi cow, accompanying Indra, approached Krishna and spoke affectionately with the logic of the goddess of learning. Surabhi said, "O Lord, you are the tilak mark of good fortune on the head of the capital of Nanda Maharaj. Please hear my words attentively. You are famous throughout the universe and worshipable by all living beings. You are incomprehensible and you manifest incredible opulence in this world. Even if hundreds of angry Indras try to kill the cows and gopas with fast-moving, ferocious clouds pouring torrents of rain, you will always protect Gokula and saturate its residents with complete bliss. Being pleased by your merciful behavior, Brahma anxiously told me, 'O goddess Surabhi, go happily and bathe the Indra of Gokula, who is the beloved son of Nanda Maharaj. Under Krishna's compassionate protection, the Brajavasis, who were praised by the poets, rebelled against Indra even though they are not envious of him. I am well known for my own misdeed of previously stealing Krishna's boyfriends and cows. Surabhi, I will follow you on my swan along with the Munis, Rishis, Kinnaras, Charanas, Sitas, and the demigods in order to relish the spiritual bliss of this pastime.' Surabhi continued, 'Hey, Krishna Chandra, just see the person standing behind me. He is always overwhelmed with grief from his anger and offenses. Casting his eyes down in shame, he repents for his rude and arrogant actions. Within his mind, he is always rebuking himself. He really wants to be forgiven for his grave offenses to you, but he is afraid to step forward. If you allow, he will come and submit his petition.' Indra wiped the tears from his thousand eyes and got down from his mountain of false pride. As he lay on the ground, surrendered to the Lord, it appeared that the radiance from the expensive gems on his crown illuminated the lotus feet of Krishna. After lying a long time on the ground, Indra stood up. He folded his hands and bowed his head. With fear and devotion in his heart, he gazed at Krishna's jewel-like toenails glowing like moonshine. Out of ignorance and false pride, he had previously acted foolishly. Now humbled, Indra offered prayers to Lord Krishna. King Indra said, 'Krishna, you are the Lord of all lords. You are the beloved son of the King of Vrindavan. Your nature is to be totally independent. Grand festivals are held just to worship you. You are the highest truth, so it is difficult for someone like me to understand your greatness. Those blinded by the arrogance of pride become intoxicated by drinking the wine of their false egos. Then how can they think favorably about your glories? Since their eyes are diseased, they cannot perceive their own perverted actions. They are just like owls that cannot see the light of the radiant sun. Therefore, O kind one, please listen to me. It is quite befitting that you stop my sacrifice in order to severely punish one whose vision has been so infected with false pride. For a blind man, a stick is the best medicine. O Lord, you are an ocean of compassion. Although you taught me a good lesson, I took it in the wrong way. The intelligence of hypocrites always directs them to act incorrectly. What can be said of us who lust after the poison of sense gratification if even the greatest sages who are free from material attachments can become agitated by the powerful mode of passion? Unless your insurmountable illusory energy acts, then how can false ego exist? All glory is to you, the benevolent one. You are the essence of everything in the three worlds. You are the embodiment of auspiciousness for Vrindavan. O matchless one, O Damodar, you are the abode of transcendental names and qualities. O friend of Dhamma, Sudama, and Vasudama, I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. You are difficult to know. Please do not cover us with illusion. O Lord, please be kind to us. With a slight sidelong glance from your eyes, you can cause fortune or misfortune. O unborn one, although you never take birth, you appear in unlimited incarnations. In bygone times, you pleased the demigods and enjoyed yourself by becoming Upendra. Just now, you will enjoy being bathed by Surabhi. You are the blue sapphire crest jewel and the crown of the Indras in every universe. O lifter of the great mountain of Govardhan, although previously known as Abhiram, that is beautiful and pleasing, you will now be known by the name of Govinda, which your devotees will regularly chant. Go means tending and caring for cows. O Lord, from today everyone will call you Govinda. After becoming purified of his false pride by glorifying Krishna, Indra commenced the auspicious bathing ceremony. Brahma, the four Kumaras, Uma, Mahadev, Tambaru, Kartikeya, Narada, and Savita attended Krishna's Abhishek. Many exalted rishis and sages beautified the assembly. The effulgent wives of the demigods, such as Arundhati, also visited. The celestial apsaras, like Urvasi watching from the sky, enhanced the festival with their splendid forms and qualities. Govardhan, with the limbs of his own body, provided an elegant throne made of smooth stones and jewels. The demigod Varuna personally held a fine white umbrella over Krishna's head, which had a fringe of hanging pearls that appeared like falling raindrops. Vayu, his arm trembling in ecstatic devotion, stood beside the Lord, fanning him with a chamara whisk. The full moon assumed the form of a mirror made of jewels. Panchajanya, the Lord's conchal, sanctified the atmosphere with loud sounds. The effulgent Sudarshan chakra expanded as many lamps to illumine all directions. Krishna's white lotus flower expanded into many white umbrellas to shield the Lord. Komadaki, the Lord's club, who was honored for his strength, stood like a jeweled pillar for the bathing ceremony. The personified forms of the sacred oceans, rivers, ponds, and lakes came with pots of water to bathe Krishna. Mother Bhumi collected the finest quality earth in a box covered with seven jewels. Placing the box on a jeweled plate, she slowly approached Krishna and offered it to him. The best herbs and medicinal plants personified presented themselves for Krishna's service. Great sacred trees, such as the banyan and peepal, manifested in person to give Krishna leaves containing the five types of tastes and golden pots studded with gems of lapis lazuli. The forest gods from the 10 directions brought water pots covered with coconuts and various delicious fruits. The Lord of the Mountains brought exotic gems and jewels. The nine jewels, the eight yogic cities, the best jewels like Chintamani, Kamadhenu, and Desire Trees, all assumed charming forms to worship the Lord. Standing at a distance, they faced Krishna with folded hands. The goddess of Mount Sumeru offered a golden cloth, and the goddess of the Himalayas presented splendid necklaces. The goddess of Gandhamadana Mountain brought golden lotuses from the Manasarovara Lake and personally strung a garland for Krishna. The goddess of the Malaya Mountain delivered the best quality sandalwood. Grinding it on a stone from Govardhan, she made a smooth, fragrant paste for Krishna. Without the knowledge of her husband, Parvati handed Krishna a gorgeous jeweled necklace. With her own hands, the Sapta Rishis plucked fresh lotus buds from the Mandakini River to offer to the Lord. When needed for service, the sun god made the lotus flowers blossom for the Lord. The shining of the moon appeared as a mirror. Agni offered an artistically designed golden incense pot with a hanging fringe made of coral. The best quality Aguru scent burned in the pot and rose into the sky through its thousands of holes. Garuda expanded his effulgent golden wings to form a protective canopy over the Lord. All the kings of the snakes fanned their hoods to serve as jeweled flags to surround the bathing platform. The various mantras and prayers used for Abhishek, like the Purusha Shukta and Sri Shukta, took personal forms to chant in alternating low and high tones. The Surabhi cow contributed the Panchagavya, and Lord Brahma provided the Pancha Amrita. Airavata, Indra's elephant carrier, filled the gem-studded bathing pots with water from the Akashganja, which he carried in his trunk. The demigods in the sky vibrated instrumental music. The celestial ladies showered flowers from Nanda Kana, while intoxicated Gandharvas, Charanas, Kimpurushas, Siddhas, Sajas, and Vidyadharas joyfully danced in the sky. All the apsaras appeared to please Krishna with a special drama. They conveyed the meaning of the play with various dance steps and facial expressions. Upon beholding the elegant form of Saimasundara, the famous apsara Urvasi felt enchanted and devoted herself to the Lord. Taking the lead in directing the bathing festival of Krishna, Lord Brahma approached Surabhi and said, "Today is the best day to observe a happy occasion. O simple village folk, do not delay. Everyone queue up behind Lord Shiva and please start the Abhishek. Before I take my turn, let the leading ladies of the universe come forward. First, Arundhati, who tried to please me, should bathe the Lord. Then Anasuya, who is non-envious and free from passion and ignorance, and Parvati, the respectable daughter of the Himalayas who gives bliss to everyone, should step forward. Then the other exalted ladies such as Gayatri, the mother of the Vedas, who welcomes the Lord when he awakens, Aditi, the mother of the demigods whose love is never broken, Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and the beautiful Swaha should bathe Krishna. Then Lord Brahma, who meditated upon a lotus, asked Krishna to sit down on the bathing platform. He began the worship by washing Krishna's feet and offering him delicious madhuparka and tambula. According to a previous arrangement, the senior ladies of Vrindavan, their hearts drowning in prema, bathed Giridhari with fragrant panchamrita, panchagavya, and the milk dripping from Surabhi's milk bag. Seeing the captivating splendor of Murari's body during the Abhishek made the onlookers question his identity. They wondered, is this a monsoon cloud being bathed in moonshine? Is it a concentration of all blueness covered with white? Is it a small hill of blue sapphires covered by the pure water of crystal gems? Is it a fresh tamal tree decorated with tiny radiant pearls? Is it a blue lotus covered with bright white camphor powder? Just like enthusiastic mothers anxious to bathe their adorable children, Gayatri, Parvati, Aditi, and the other chaste demigoddesses like Arundhati stepped forward and smeared Krishna's body with oil and fragrant cleansing powders. One after another, the four Kumaras and the Saptarishis bathed Giridhari while chanting mantras. Ordered by Brahma, the four Kumaras offered water with their folded palms. Feeling great ecstasy, the young sages cried and shivered in delight. After smearing fragrant red dish oil upon Krishna's body, Parvati and the other ladies performed the Sahasra Patra Snan. They held a plate above Krishna's head that had 1,000 holes and showered him with streams of crystal clear camphorated water. By the powerful presence of the Kamadhenu, Kalpataru, and Chintamani gems, everything required for Krishna's bathing automatically manifested. After Krishna's bath, some pretty chaste girls dried his beautiful body with fine, soft cloths. Different girls dried his hair, chest, hands, legs, and feet. One young girl, with the mood of an intimate lover, wrapped Krishna's body with a fresh, dry cloth while removing the wet one and wringing it out. After they had dried Krishna's body from head to toe a few times, Parvati advised the young girls how to neatly dress him. They lovingly offered Krishna the best quality garments, ornaments, and unguents which they had previously collected. Although Krishna accepted all this on Brahma's request, he felt somewhat disturbed because his confidential pastimes with the gopis and gopis were temporarily interrupted. Despite his anxiety, Krishna did not want to interfere with the demigods who tasted so much happiness from bathing him. Being Krishna's devotees, they tried their best to serve him with affection. Krishna accepted their offerings but remained grave. After Krishna's bath and dressing, Brahma offered him an auspicious seat under a tree. Brahma wanted to give the utmost pleasure to the Lord by worshipping him with all opulence. Along with offering the standard 16 items of puja, Brahma also intended to chant some elaborate mantras. While Brahma was making these arrangements, Lord Shiva approached him and said, "O Brahma, There is a well-known saying that an intelligent person does not worry. Krishna's puja will be done by this small boy standing in front. Just nearby, an attractive effulgence emanated from the 18-syllable mantra, Gopal mantra, which had manifested a personified form of a small boy. Seeing that everyone in the assembly was pleased with this little boy, Brahma said, "Oh, the Gopal mantra of ecstatic mellows has come in person. Narada Muni gave this great mantra, whose meter is Gayatri, to men and sages in order to remove the obstacles to bhakti from their hearts. Thus I am being completely distinguished in two ways. Now I will also worship Krishna by chanting this mantra." Empowered by the Gopal mantra, Brahma worshiped Krishna. Many eminent devotees attended the puja, including Narada and rishis like Sanaka, who uproots all anti-devotional desires. Dhruva, the ideal of devotional determination, Prahlad, who gives delight to all, and the Vasus, who are eternally fixed in the Sattvata philosophy. Stepping forward, Brahma washed Krishna's lotus feet. Then he sat down in the lotus posture and gazed appreciatively at the Lord with his eight eyes. The milk ocean personified brought valuable bathing pots for the Lord, along with many big, beautiful, pure white conch shells. Brahma was anxious because there were no stands to hold them. Suddenly, Mount Meru personified appeared with many golden three-legged stands to properly hold those conches. The demigods and their wives worshipped Krishna with a variety of articles. The goddess of Kailash presented an auspicious quartz crystal lota that increased everyone's happiness. The splendidly beautiful goddess of the Himalayas offered a fancy tray of sweet-smelling wild flowers. The Vanadevi supplied fragrant forest flowers, sun-dried rice, barley, kusha grass, sesame seeds, white mustard seeds, wild black rice, darba grass, aparajitya flowers, and other natural items mixed with water to bathe Krishna's attractive lotus feet. They also provided captivatingly aromatic nutmeg, cloves, and allspice for washing his mouth. Bhumidevi delivered incredible natural scents. Some demigods from the Nanda Kanana forest donated an ornament made from divine, wish-fulfilling flowers along with garments of the finest yellow cloth. Swaha, the wife of Agni, offered a brilliant lamp containing ghee from Surabhi cows and natural camphor scent. The Kamadhenus delivered an abundance of heavenly milk products. Aditi furnished many kinds of fancy cakes and sweet pies. Sachidevi, Indra's wife, supplied enchanting tambula covered with golden pan leaves. The demigods and demigoddesses arrived from every direction, bringing valuable items to offer to Krishna. In great joy, Brahma chanted the Mula mantras to initiate the auspicious bathing ceremony. The demigods played the appropriate melodies on their kettle drums, while the apsaras danced with euphoria. The gandharvas and charanas sang with youthful exuberance to fill everyone's heart with bliss. Kartikeya devotedly held an umbrella over Krishna's head. The rishis recited purifying hymns. Brahma adorned Krishna's forehead with pleasing, artistically drawn tilak. Overwhelmed in jubilation, he placed an opulent crown on Krishna's head. The potent jewels in that crown flashed light in all directions. While setting the crown, Brahma said, "O Krishna, you are the supreme king among all the kings of the universe." Hearing this, rishis like Sunanda and others loudly chanted selected prayers. "All glories to the enchanter of Vrindavan. O son of Nanda Maharaj, O Almighty One, you are the charming beloved of the splendid gopis. You were the crest jewel of all the demigods. The nectar of serving your lotus feet far surpasses the bliss of Brahman. O Govinda, you were the original cause of all creation. We offer our repeated obeisances unto you." After preparing himself by setting aside his snake ornaments and skull garland, and by taking a bath in the Manasi Ganga to wash off his ashes, Lord Shiva offered the final arti. He worshipped Krishna, with pure, fragrant clay, incense, patty, an elegant jeweled ghee lamp, and sweet-smelling scents. He chanted various mantras to conclude the Arati and Abhishek. Following the Vedic injunctions, Gayatri, Gauri, Arundhati, and other wives of the demigods took turns offering Arati with ghee lamps. As the worship concluded, Narada Muni merged in ecstasy as he sang about Krishna's pastime of lifting Govardhan Hill. Tambaru, the king of the Gandharvas, sang along with him. Brahma distributed Mahaprasadam to all the devotees at the conclusion of Govinda's bathing ceremony. Lord Brahma gave the following order to the personified conches, jewels, kalpaturus, chintamani gems, and so on. Please decorate and ornament the sages, the demigods and their wives, the Lord of the Snakes, and all the other guests. Everyone attending Krishna's glorious Abhishek received priceless gifts and charity. Feeling the supreme euphoria from successfully conducting the Abhishek, Lord Brahma looked as brilliant as the sun. Before returning to their celestial homes, all the demigods respectfully circumambulated Govinda. However, Indra and Surabhi remained behind for a moment. After the four-headed one and all the demigods departed, Krishna addressed the fearless, intelligent Indra. In a happy, humorous mood, Krishna said, "Is your anger now pacified? Tell me truthfully, you are close to me, so you should not conceal the mood of your heart. I did not subdue your anger out of revenge or enmity, but I wanted to show how your actions were full of false pride. By nature, I cannot bear to see my own devotees possessing false pride. It is well known that such persons deserve to be punished by me. O Indra, I favored you by stopping the sacrifice. O subduer of your enemies, it does not suit you to maintain envy toward me. Now return to Swarga and enjoy your position. Do not be carried away by your wealth and lose your intelligence again." Indra listened patiently to Krishna's compassionate words and accepted his kind chastisement. After respectfully circumambulating the Lord, he went back to Indrapuri. Then Krishna anointed Surabhi with the fragrance of his pure affection and bid her farewell. Dressed in a glimmering new golden outfit, Krishna looked most beautiful as he returned to Vrindavan. It seemed as if he had just returned after a moment's absence. Jaya, Jaya, Jaya.